The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
In a land where no good deed goes unpunished, Frank Morgan, the last gunfighter, is in for a lot of punishment.
Come on, let's go see about this.
Reagan.
If that was one of your parts, I'm afraid they crossed the divide, fella. One shot up real bad in front of the cabin. The other still inside.
I'm called Roof. Roof Blake.
Anybody you'd like for me to write to?
You mean to tell him I'm dead?
Just in case.
My ma and sister who live in Flagstaff. Ma's name is Alma Blake. My sister is Tess. I got wages coming from the Lazy F spread owned by Howard Flynn.
I'll see to it that your ma and sister get what's coming to you, Roof. Don't you worry.
Hold your fire, mister. We just want to find out if our parts are all right.
Come ahead. But keep your hands where I can see them.
That looks like a couple of our friends.
One's Roof Blake, the other's called Bragan. That's all I know about him. Wardell's still in the cabin.
What happened here?
I rode up and found the cabin on fire, and those men lying out here. They'd been shot as they ran outside.
He's lying, Buxton. I bet a hat he's the one who killed them boys.
Morgan's in for punishment and a lot of headaches.
I don't normally wear a badge.
Yeah, before, though. So it ain't like I'm asking you to do something you've never done.
I'm on my way to Phoenix. I've been mixed up in enough shooting scrapes in my life.
I can see why you feel that way. But the plain fact of the matter is, we need you here, Frank.
Punishment, headaches, and Frank Morgan ends up with a target on his back.
Shit!
Morgan! It's Frank Morgan! He's their leader! Get him!
Frank Morgan.
That's my name. What business is it of yours, mister?
Just making a note of it. I like to keep track of these things.
What things?
Oh, just the men I've killed.
Saddle up for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter number 14, The Devil's Legion, in Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, 11. Blood of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Tim Getman, Stephen Carpenter, Jonathan Watkins, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Michael John Casey, Scott McCormick, Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Ren Casey, Andy Clemens, Johan Detweiler, Chris Rowan, and Nanette Saval.
God, you act like you don't know me. Come on, dogs.
Sheriff Monte Carson swung down in front of the mountain home. He petted several of the many dogs that lived around the place. Properly stroked, they scampered off to resume their playing. Monte looked up as the front door opened. The sheriff had never gotten used to how big the man was who stood in the doorway. The man was inches over 6 feet with the weight to go with it. His shoulders were door-wide and hard-packed with muscle. His hips were lean, and the muscles in his legs strained as denim jeans.
Morning, Smoke.
Monte, you're just in time for breakfast and coffee. Come on in.
Monte took off his hat and stepped into the lovely home of Smoke and Sally Jensen.
Morning, Sheriff.
Howdy, Sally. Looking just as beautiful as ever.
Listen to you. You must be hungry, buttering me up like that.
He took a seat at the kitchen table. Sally turned to the stove and cracked 3 more eggs and added another thick slice of ham to the other skillet. Smoke poured the sheriff a cup of coffee.
What's up, Monte?
Damn good coffee. Smoke, how long's it been since you heard from your sister Janie?
Well, hell, years. I thought she was dead.
She is.
Monte reached into his jacket pocket and took out a telegraph.
This came in early today. It's from the marshal of a little town up in Montana, right smack in the middle of the Rockies. A mining town called Red Light.
Sally turned from the stove and arched an eyebrow at that.
I know. Strange name for a town. You'd better read the wire, Smoke. Here.
Sally put the sheriff's ham and eggs and home-fried potatoes in front of him.
Janie Jensen died recently of natural causes and left everything to her brother, Stop. Important that Mr. K. Jensen come to Red Light as soon as possible to lay claim to estate, which includes business in town and ranch in Valley, Stop. Club Bowers, Sheriff, Red Light, Montana. I knew a Club Bowers. He was an outlaw.
Same one. I know him, too. That might give you an idea what kind of town it is.
Just where is Red Light?
It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a mining town. It's isolated. Nearest town of any good size is 100 miles away. There's talk of changing the name from Red Light to something else, but so far it's just talk.
Monte, you're walking around something. Come on, what is it?
This is one of those freak strikes, Smoke. It's a place where gold and silver shouldn't be. But they were found, and it's a good vein. It's slowing down some, but it'll probably be producing for a good many years to come. I know about Red Light. I had a friend killed up there a couple years ago. Town is set up in the mountains above one of the prettiest valleys you ever put your eyes on. Valley runs for miles and miles. River runs right through the entire length of the valley. The ranchers down there supply the beef for the miners. Tell you the truth, in a situation like that, I'd rather have a ranch than a gold mine. You'd best get up there. If you tarry long, you just might not have a ranch left.
The other ranchers might take it?
Uh-huh. And you'll notice the wire read K. Jensen. That tells me your sis never let on about your nickname. You bet those other ranchers will try to horn in. They'll be fighting like coyotes over a scrap of meat.
I wonder what the business is in town.
Monte shrugged.
Janie, all these years I thought she was dead. I would have sworn she was dead. I heard she was. Now, damn it, I know she was dead. Then...
Her daughter, honey?
Sally put Smoke's plate in front of him and sat down with a biscuit and a cup of coffee.
That all you eating?
I'm on a diet. Smoke, do you think it's her daughter?
Maybe. She did have a daughter by that gambling man she took off with back in Missouri. She pulled out in 64 and I heard she had the child in 67. She wouldn't be out of her teens.
Right. I remember some of the women talking about it back in Idaho Territory before I met you. Jenny was her name.
Monte, can you wire back to see if this is Janie or Jenny who died?
Sure.
I'll be in town this afternoon and stop by your office.
Monte finished his breakfast and headed on back to town. Smoke and Sally lingered at the table over a second cup of coffee.
This is bringing back bad memories for you, isn't it, Smoke?
Some. But I'll survive.
This girl, if it is Jenny, would be no more than a child, 17 at most.
What do you remember about her?
Nothing. I never saw her. The ladies of the town said she was at school back east.
Well, we'll know more after I go into town.
Later, in his office, Monte Carson handed Smoke several pages of telegraph paper.
Here's the whole story, Smoke. I wired a sheriff I know up in Montana Territory. He knew all about it.
Thanks. Miss Janie Jensen died of fever 2 years ago. Stop. Was prominent businesswoman in town and owned businesses and ranch in Valley. Stop. Is buried in Red Light, Montana Cemetery. Stop. Had one daughter, Jenny, who returned to Red Light and is living on ranch. Stop. Entire estate left to Jenny. Stop. No one knew where to find Janie's brother, Mr. K. Jensen. Stop. Understand he was finally located in Colorado and notified. Stop. Tell him to be careful and don't trust any law officer in county. Stop. K. Jensen is riding into a den of snakes. Stop. Any relation to Smoke? Stop. If so, he might want to take him along. Well, a man lays it right on the line, doesn't he?
Tom's a good man. Is Sally going up there with you?
No, at least not initially. I might send for her later on. Jenny vanished. I don't like the sound of that. Damn it, Monty. She's my only kin, except for some folks in Iowa that I've never seen and who fought against my father in the war. I understand they harbored such bad feelings toward those Jensens who fought for the South that they changed their name from Jensen with a second E to Jensen with an O.
That war tore up a lot of family, Smoke, mine included. When are you pulling out?
Tomorrow, probably. I'll ride the trains as far as possible. It's been a while since old Buck and I hit the trail. We'll both look forward to it.
Not taking one of your Appaloosas?
No, not this time. Buck's a mountain horse and better than any watchdog in the world. And meaner, too. I want him to see more country before I retire him. Lord knows we've seen some trails together.
Buck was a mountain-bred buckskin that was just about too big and too much horse for the average man. But Smoke was not an average man. He had gentle-broken the animal.
I guess I'm just about the only one who can ride him.
Hell, Smoke, mean-eyed as that animal is, you're about the only one who'd want to ride him.
Sally handed Smoke a sack of food for the trail.
Now you change into your suit when you reach the rails.
Yes, dear.
And you button your collar and fix your tie properly.
Yes, dear.
And if your suit is rumpled, you have it brushed and ironed in the nearest town.
Yes, dear.
And as soon as you're settled up there, send for me.
Yes, dear.
And you will not let anyone know that you are Smoke Jensen unless it becomes absolutely necessary.
Yes, dear.
The most famous gunfighter in the world smiled, towering above Sally outside their house. He closed his big hands around her arms and gently picked her up with all the ease of picking up a pillow. He kissed her lips and set her back down.
What's funny?
Knowing my sister, what if it turns out the business she owned in town is a whorehouse?
If that is the case, Mr. Jensen, you are in a world of trouble.
Yes, dear.
Now, Smoke Jensen was a known gunfighter, but not by choice. Dozens of books, called penny dreadfuls, had been written about him, 99% of them pure crap and nonsense. Songs had been sung about him, and at least one play was still being performed about the life and times of Smoke Jensen. Smoke had read some of the books, or as much of them as he could stand, and he usually used them afterward to light fires in the stove or fireplace. Songs were terrible, and that play was worse. But for all his fame and notoriety, relatively few people knew what he looked like. He seldom left his horse ranch, called the Sugarloaf, in the mountains of Colorado, and when he did venture out, it usually was not for long. He raised Appaloosas on his ranch, running only a few head of cattle now. So many would-be toughs and gunslingers had taken to wearing their guns as Smoke wore his that the trademark was no longer a giveaway. Smoke rarely buckled on two guns anymore, doing so only when he knew he was riding into trouble. He was content to wear one gun, right side, low and tied down. He was a ruggedly handsome man, but not in the pretty boy way. His face was strong, his jaw firm, and his eyes cold as winter-locked fjords. He loved children and animals and attended church on a regular basis, even though the preacher at the town of Big Rock, Colorado, knew Smoke would never pay much attention to the New Testament, since he was strictly an Old Testament man. His wife, Sally, was one of the New England Reynoldses and enormously wealthy. She was a strong-willed woman, not one to mince words and certainly not someone to ride over. Sally was a strong supporter of women's rights. She was outspoken on the subject and would not back down even from a grizzly. She had strapped on pistol and picked up rifle and sent more than one thug to hell in her time. But she was also a loving mother and a faithful companion to her husband, and a sweet person, just as long as you didn't mess with her man. Smoke rode to the rails and boarded the train. At rail's end, he signed the hotel registry as K. Jensen, and no one paid any special attention to him, except for the men commenting on his size and the ladies on how handsome and how well-mannered he was. Smoke had stabled Buck, curried him, and told the boy to grain him and not to mess with him. It was doubtful Buck would hurt a child. He had never, but one never knew. The horse was a killer, and he bonded only with Smoke. Smoke carefully bathed and shaved and dressed in a dark suit, white shirt, and black string tie. He belted his gun around him and tied it down, slipping the hammer thong free of the hammer. It was something he did from habit, like breathing. The large hotel, fairly fancy for the time, had a separate bar and dining room, connected by a door that was guarded on the saloon side by a man who looked like he ate wagons for lunch. Smoke entered the bar and ordered a whiskey. Not much of a drinking man, he did occasionally enjoy a drink before dinner. Sometimes a brandy after dinner and a beer after a hard day's ride. Saloons were a meeting place where a man could find out road conditions, trouble spots where highwaymen lurked, the best place to buy horses or cattle, what range was closed, and where good water could be found. Smoke leaned against the bar, sipping his whiskey. And he listened.
I hear tell Smoke Jensen got killed down in Mexico. Gunfighter name of Jake Bonner got him.
Smoke hid his smile.
What'd he do? Back shoot him?
Well, drew him.
Smoke knew Jake Bonner was a two-bit punk who'd been making brags for several years that if he ever came upon Smoke Jensen, he was gonna kill him.
Bonner's in town now.
And he's saying he killed Jensen?
Oh, hell yeah. He's talking big about it.
Well, by God. I knew he'd been gone for several months. I heard he hired out his gun. Say now, this is news.
Says he's got proof. Says he's got Jensen's boots. Just jerked him off his dead body. Fancy engraved boots, too. Got the initials S.J. right on the front of each one.
You don't say.
Say, stranger.
Smoke realized the citizen at his side was talking to him, and he turned slightly.
Yeah.
Hey, didn't you come in on the 418 train?
That's right.
I thought so. Did you hear anything about Jake Bonner killing Smoke Jensen?
No, I haven't heard anything about that.
Funny. Seemed like the news would be all over.
If it's true.
Mister, you're a biggin', but I'd not call Jake Bonner a liar if I was you. Jake's a bad one.
Every town has one.
Not as bad as Jake. A man's cat quick with a gun. Why, he's got 5 notches carved in his gun handle.
Tinhorn trick.
You calling me a tin horn?
Smoke turned slowly. The man facing him from about 30 feet away was young, no more than 22 or 23. He wore 2 guns, pearl-handled, in a fancy rig. His coat was swept back, his hands by his side.
Anybody who carves notches in his gun handles is a tin horn. If that fits you, wear it.
I'm Jake Bonner, the man who killed Smoke Jensen. And you'll take back that remark, mister, or you'll drag iron.
What if I decide to do neither?
Then you're a yellow dog.
I've known some nice dogs in my time.
As a matter of fact, I've known a lot more nice dogs than nice humans.
Back in a corner of the big room, a faro dealer sat with a smile on his lips. Of all the men in that room, he alone knew who the big man in the black suit was. He'd seen him several times, and once in action. And he knew that if Jake Bonner didn't close his mouth and do it real quick, he was either going to be dead on the floor or stomped into a cripple.
Mister, I think you're a liar and a coward. What do you have to say about that?
I think you better go home before I decide to change your diapers.
Before you what?
Well, that cleared the bar. Only the faro dealer remained in the direct line of fire. He knew that if Bonner was dumb enough to draw, or even attempt to draw, he'd never get a shot off. The faro dealer figured he was in the safest spot in the saloon.
Are you deaf as well as stupid?
He knew he was pushing, but punks infuriated Smoke, especially one who walked around making the claim that he'd killed him. Smoke knew then that Bonner was no gunfighter. No gunfighter wanted action this close up. The odds were too great that both men would take a lead.
You're a dead man, mister.
No, but you're sure a hurt one.
Smoke backhanded Jake with a right hand that knocked the man spinning into a table and from there to the floor.
Hey, you can't do that.
Bonner scrambled to his feet.
What the hell, I can't.
The big stranger knocked Jake right back down. He felt his lips pulp and knew he'd lost a couple of teeth. Smoke pulled the kid up by his shirt. The big man hauled back a huge fist and busted Jake right on the nose. Jake's beak busted. The blood poured. In a fog of hurt, Jake felt himself being jerked to his feet and hurled through the air. He crashed against the wall and the air left him. When Jake could catch his breath, he reached for his guns, but his holsters were empty. He blinked a couple of times and saw his guns on the bar in front of the big stranger. The stranger was calmly sipping at his whiskey. Smoke unloaded the matched .45s and lined up the cartridges on the bar.
Children shouldn't play with guns. You might hurt yourself, Boner.
My name is Bonner!
You all through trying to play tough boy, bonehead.
Jake struggled to his feet and stood swaying for a moment. Then he reached behind him and jerked out a knife.
I really wish you hadn't done that.
Jake?
It was the faro dealer who spoke now.
Don't do it, boy. You don't know who you're messing with.
Jake sneered at the dealer. Smoke stood facing the bar, both hands on the polished mahogany. Blood dripped down from Jake's busted nose and smashed lips.
I'm gonna gut you like a fish, mister!
The bat wings flipped open then, and a man wearing a star stood there.
Put it down, Jake. Do it now, or I'll shoot you where you stand.
Jake slowly lowered the knife. The marshal walked over to face the young would-be tough.
What the hell ran over you, Jake? A beer wagon?
Jake didn't answer.
Put the knife up, Jake. Right now.
Jake sheathed the big blade. Then he abruptly turned and lurched from the saloon.
These are his guns, Marshal. I took the precaution of unloading them.
Jake's a pretty salty type, mister. Not many men around here would have tried to disarm him.
He's a two-bit loudmouth. Nothing more.
You got a name?
Doesn't everybody?
Smoke turned and walked out of the bar and into the dining area. The marshal was irritated, and his face showed it. He turned to follow Smoke.
Leave him alone, Jeff. He's a good, decent man who was pushed, that's all. Believe me when I say that this is the last man in the world you want to crowd.
You know him, Sparks?
I seen him a time or two, yes. He just wants to have a meal and a good night's sleep, that's all.
Yeah? All right, I'll take your word for it. But you know Jake's not going to stand for this.
His funeral, Marshal.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Smoke ate his meal and had coffee and then stepped out onto the porch for a cigarette and a breath of night air. He had not forgotten Jake Bonner. That would have been a very unwise thing to do, because the Jakes of this world, once humiliated, would never forgive or forget, and Smoke was careful of his back. He looked across the street and saw the marshal sitting on the boardwalk watching him. Smoke knew that the marshal figured Jake wasn't gonna forget what happened in the saloon either. And it looked like the marshal thought Jake just might decide to do something tonight. Smoke sat down in a chair that was shrouded in darkness and finished his cigarette. He was tired, but not sleepy. He knew he should go on up to his room and lie down, but he didn't want to do that. He was more irritated than restless. He would have liked to walk the main street of the town, but to do so would only bring him trouble.
Hell, sitting here will probably bring me trouble. Damn it. Come on, Jake. Come on. If you're going to do something foolish, do it now and get it over with.
The marshal stood up and walked to his office. He stood for a moment in the open door, then stepped inside and closed it behind him.
Oh, hell, I'm a stranger here. I better have witnesses.
Smoke stood up and walked through the hotel lobby to the bar. A tall, well-dressed man in a tailored suit.
Coffee, barkeep.
Place was doing a brisk business, but when Smoke elected to stand at the bar, that long bar cleared, the men choosing tables instead. That amused Smoke in a sour sort of way. He was conscious of the faro dealer watching him. He knew he'd seen the man before somewhere down the line. The bat wings pushed open, and Jake Bonner stood there, his bruised face swollen now. He'd found more guns, and his holsters were full.
I'm calling your hand, mister! Now you turn around and face me!
Smoke turned, brushing back his coat as he did.
Go home, Jake Bonner. There's no need for this.
The faro dealer stood.
Do what he says, Jake. He's giving you a chance to live. Take it.
Sit down and shut up, gambler. This ain't none of your affair. I'm the man who killed Smoke Jensen. And no two-bit stranger does to me what this one's done.
You didn't kill Smoke Jensen, Jake. Smoke Jensen is standing in front of you.
Jake's face flat out drained of blood.
Go home, Jake. Go home and live. Don't crowd me.
God damn you!
Jake grabbed iron. He felt a hammer blow in the center of his chest. He stumbled backward and fell against the wall. Then slowly slid down to sit on the floor. His guns were still in leather. Smoke holstered his gun and stood by the bar. He picked up his coffee cup with his left hand.
Just right, barkeep.
Jesus God! Well, I seen it, but I don't believe it. It was a blur. Hell, it wasn't even that.
The marshal stepped in then, gun drawn. He looked at Jake, then at Smoke, and holstered his .45.
I knew it was gonna happen. I thought about locking Jake up until morning. Now I wish I had.
Jake called him and Drew first, or tried to. That's Smoke Jensen, Marshal.
The poor dumb fool. Oh, not you, Jensen.
You have any questions for me?
Only one. When are you leaving town?
First thing in the morning.
Good. Somebody get the Undertaker and get Jake fitted for a box.
Yeah, I'll go, Jeff.
The marshal looked at Smoke. There were things he wanted to say, but he was wise enough not to say them. It wasn't that he blamed Smoke, because he was pretty sure that Smoke must have been pushed into the fight.
Good night, Mr. Jensen.
Smoke nodded and left the room. He was gone before dawn the next morning. Smoke had a long ride ahead of him, but it was one he was looking forward to. He had wanted to provision up at the town that was now miles behind him, but he felt it was best to move on. There might be more like Jake Bonner in town. So he shot a rabbit and had that for lunch, then caught several fish and had them for his dinner. The next day, he rode up to an old trading post and, after looking it over from a distance, decided to provision there. He stepped inside and knew immediately he had walked into some sort of disagreement. There were six men besides the owner in the dark and smoky room that served as a bar. Cowboys from the look of them. Three stood facing three, and their faces were dark with anger. The owner, or manager, or whatever the hell he was, stood behind the rough plank bar.
Beans and bacon. and flour and coffee.
Mister, this ain't a real good time for doing no grocery shopping.
It's as good a time as any. Fill the order.
I reckon Dupree hired you too, mister. Smoke looked at the cowboy.
Nobody hired me to do anything. And I never heard of any Dupree. Just passing through is all. You boys carry on with your business and let me do mine.
Smoke's gaze returned to the man behind the bar.
Toss in a box of 44s while you're at it.
Cowboy looked out the window at Smoke's horse.
Hey, I never seen that brand before.
Now you have. A can of peaches, too. You have any food cooked?
Beef and beans. Look, mister, ride on. This ain't no time.
Dish me up a plate of it. A big plate. I'm hungry.
Are you hard of hearing? You was told to ride on.
All in all, Smoke thought, this trip was turning out to be a disaster from the get-go.
Buddy, I don't know what your problem is, but I do have a suggestion. Leave me the hell alone and stick to your own knitting.
Cowboys, obviously working on opposite sides of the fence and probably arguing over range or strayed beef or water rights, looked at one another and silently decided to band together against this stranger, who it appeared was not taking either side very seriously. The bartender shoved a plate of food at the tall stranger, and Smoke stood at the bar and went to eating, ignoring the cowboys.
Well, if that don't beat all, just turns his back to us and starts feeding his face.
Fill the order, traitor.
Oh, hell.
You feel that order, Smith, and you'll get no more business from the Lazy J.
And none from the Three Star.
Fill the order.
Mister, you're putting me in one hell of a bind. You know that?
It's a free country. If you don't want to sell me the goods, then do so on your own choosing, not because of threats from this bunch of saddle bums.
Saddle bums?
The cowpunch walked up to the bar and leaned against it, staring hard at Smoke. He took a closer look at the man nonchalantly eating his meal. Fella sure was big. He looked at the man's wrists. Hell, they were bigger than most men's forearms. But he figured the six of them could handle him without much trouble.
Mister, I think we'll just clean your clock.
Smoke looked up from his meal.
Excuse me a moment, traitor.
Smoke turned and pounded that cowboy with a left that seemed to come out of nowhere. The man's boots flew out from under him and he was slammed to the floor, flat on his back. He did not move.
Now, leave me the hell alone and let me finish my meal.
The five remaining men first looked at Smoke, then at the motionless puncher on the floor. One side of the man's face was rapidly swelling, and they could see his jaw was broken. No one among them seemed especially eager to step up to the bar.
Close your mouth and fill my order, traitor.
Yes, sir.
You as good with that gun as you are with your fists, mister.
It was the cowboy from the Lazy J.
Better.
You just might have to prove it.
You make me do that, you're gonna have to prove you're not short on sense. I'm passing through, nothing more. You boys are on the prod, not me. You pushed me, not the other way around. Think about it.
You got a name?
Smoke put down his fork and turned, facing the five again. It was then that several of them noticed the hammer thong had been slipped from the big stranger's six gun. No one had seen him do it, so that meant it was done when his boots left the stirrups and hit the ground. All of them noticed that he was facing 5-1 odds and showing no fear, no excitement, nothing except dead calm.
Smoke Jensen.
Oh, hell.
The bartender slowly sank to the floor behind the beer barrel.
Fell her down the way claims to have killed Jensen in Mexico.
That was Jake Bonner. He lied. Jake Bonner is now dead. I killed him night before last. I didn't want to, but he crowded me. Just like you're doing now.
I sure as hell ain't crowding you. I'm sitting down and staying out of this.
Yeah, me too.
Three of the men moved out of the line of fire and sat down very carefully and put their hands on the rough tabletop. It was by no means an act of cowardice. It was just showing exceptionally good sense.
Sit down, Luke. You too, Shorty. This is stupid. The man ain't done us no harm. I'm big enough to admit we was out of line and pushy.
I ain't taking no water from no killer.
The short one nodded agreement.
Me neither. And I ain't real sure this is Smoke Jensen. I think he's a tin horn.
I'll turn around and finish my meal. You boys sit down and have a beer on me. How about that?
I say you go right straight to hell.
It won't be me who takes the trip today, Shorty.
You can't take both of us.
I can, but I don't want to.
Now I know he ain't Smoke Jensen. He's Yeller.
Front door opened then, and two men stepped in. Both quickly sized up the situation.
What the hell? Shorty, sit down.
Luke, you do the same right now.
This tin horn braced me, boss.
No, he didn't. We all started this. Dixie there stuck his face in the stranger's and got stretched out with one punch.
This hombre says he smoked Jensen, boss.
The men, obviously the owners of the Lazy J and the Three Star, stepped between Smoke and the two riders. One faced the punchers, the other faced Smoke.
Huh. Is that right?
That's right. I came in here for a meal and supplies, nothing more. And I'll ride if given the chance. But no more mouth from you boys.
We pay the men for work. What they do or say in their own time is their business.
Then I hope you have room in your cemetery for two more.
The traitor stood up.
Now, Jensen's telling the truth. He didn't do nothing except come in here and ask for supplies. I think you better ride.
Is that an order?
The rancher's smile was getting thin.
Just a suggestion, Mr. Jensen.
Sack up my supplies, traitor, and total up my bill. I'll be moving along.
Uh-huh. Just like I said. Yeller!
Both ranchers stepped out of the way. That was the final straw, and they both knew it. Luke sat down. Smoke looked at Shorty. The man was sweating. He'd worked himself into a corner, and he didn't know how to get out of it now. Smoke was probably a pretty decent sort. It was not a crime to be young, so Smoke took a chance and took a step toward the puncher. Shorty looked confused and stood a step back, bumping into a table. Smoke kept walking toward him.
Are you crazy? Hold up, man!
Smoke walked right up to Shorty and jerked his six-shooter from leather. He tossed the gun to a puncher seated at a table. The puncher caught the .45 and held it like he was holding a lighted stick of dynamite.
Sit down, Shorty, and I'll buy you a drink. The trouble is over.
Shorty sat and then looked up at Smoke.
That took guts, Mr. Jensen. I acted the fool.
We all do from time to time. You don't hold a corner on the market.
Smoke shook hands with all the men. Whatever friction might have been between the punchers had vanished. They got Dixie to his boots and turned out his jaw wasn't broken, but it damn sure was badly bent.
I had a mule kick me one time. Wasn't that hard?
The ranchers sent their men back to home range, and they sat and had coffee with Smoke.
So Jake Bonner finally got himself 6 feet. Well, it's overdue.
You looking for land up this way, Smoke?
No. I'm heading for a place called Red Light. Can you tell me anything about it?
It's a damn good place to stay away from. It's a den of snakes, and they're all poison.
It's a hard 4-day ride from here. Figure around 6 unless you want to wear your horse out. But if that's your buckskin out yonder, don't look like he ever gets tired.
He's a good one, and the best bodyguard I ever had.
I can believe that. He gave me a look that made me give him a wide berth. Thanks for giving Shorty a break. He's a good boy, but hot-headed. This might cool him down some.
The men chatted for a time, the ranchers telling Smoke the best way up to the rip-roaring mining town of Red Light. And then Smoke packed his supplies and rode north.
I always figured Smoke Jensen for a much older man.
He killed his first man when he was about 14. And he dropped out of sight for a few years, raised by mountain men. Old Preacher took him under his wing. When Jensen surfaced a few years later, he was pure hell on wheels with a gun. When I found out it was him in my post, I damn near messed my drawers. I gotta admit, though, he's a nice fella once you get to know him.
The West was being settled and tamed slowly, but it was getting there. Smoke avoided the many little towns and settlements that were cropping up all over the place. Most would be gone in a couple of years. A few would prosper and grow. By the end of the third day, Smoke was beginning to feel a little gamey, and he wanted a hot bath, a cloth bed with clean sheets and a meal that someone else had cooked. He topped a ridge and looked down at a small six-store town, about a dozen homes scattered around the short main street. He rode slowly down the rutted road. As he entered the town, he was conscious of the eyes on him. He swung down in front of the livery.
Howdy.
Howdy. This here's Buck. I'll stall and curry him myself.
You're right, you will. I damn sure wouldn't touch that hoss. That beast got a wicked look to his eyes.
Nah, gentle as a kitten.
What kind of kitten? A puma?
Smoke spent the next few minutes taking care of Buck while the big horse chomped away at grain. Then, taking his kit and his rifle, Smoke walked across the street to the combination saloon, cafe, and hotel. It was mid-afternoon, and the town was quiet. He registered as Kay Jensen and went to his room. Taking fresh clothing, he walked to the barber shop and ordered hot water for the tub while he had himself a shave.
Passing through?
Yep, seeing the country. Thought I'd head up to Red Light and see what's up there.
Ooh, trouble. That's a bad place to head for, mister. Oh, yes, indeed. You're a hard day and a half from Red Light, over the mountains. Used to be a decent place. Lots of small miners. And then Major Cosgrove moved in with his pack of trouble hunters, and before you knew what had happened, he owned the whole kit and caboodle.
Is that right?
Oh, yes, I'm here to tell you. Them that tried to hold on to their claims suddenly got seriously dead. They tried to get their dust out, and they was robbed. I ran a shop up there for a few years. I made good money, but ooh, it got chancy, so I pulled out and settled here. The money ain't so good, but the peace is nice. Yes, very nice. Except, of course, when Red Lee and his boys come to town.
Red Lee?
Owns a ranch east of here. Likes to think he owns everybody around here, too. You know the type?
Sure.
Sure. Couple of his boys over to the saloon now. You'd best walk light around them. They like to start trouble, and they fancy themselves gunslicks.
I'll certainly take that under advisement.
You do that. Can't be too careful, you know.
Smoke bathed carefully and then ordered more hot water to rinse off in. Dressed in clean clothes while his others were being laundered, Smoke walked back to the hotel and into the saloon for a whiskey to cut the trail dust. It was just a tad early for supper. He ignored the three men sitting at a table and walked to the bar, but he immediately pegged the men as rowdies and trouble hunters. Nowhere had he seen any sign of a marshal or marshal's office in the small town. Smoke was beginning to have bad feelings about this trip. All he'd set out to do was settle his dead sister's affairs, and so far all he'd had was trouble. He really wished he was back on the Sugarloaf with Sally.
Whiskey from the good bottle.
Yes, sir.
Well, now, looks like we got us a dandy come to town, boys. From the good bottle.
Smoke looked at the bartender as he poured the whiskey. There were warning signs in the man's eyes, but Smoke ignored them. He was tired from the trail, wanting only a drink, a hot meal, and a warm bed. He was in no mood to be pushed around by the likes of those at the table. They were, as the good folks in the Deep South called them, white trash. Smoke took a sip of his whiskey and carefully set the glass down. He turned to face the men.
You have a problem with that loudmouth?
The men fell silent, their mocking smile suddenly gone from their faces. The bartender moved back, away from the tall stranger. Two locals at a table looked at each other and wished the hell they were somewhere else.
You talking to me, mister?
I don't see anyone else in the room who stuck his lip into my business.
You just bought yourself a whole mess of trouble, mister.
You got it to dish out? Fists or guns? It don't make a damn bit of difference to me. Step up here and toe the mark.
You know who you're about to tangle with, Drifter?
Three brain jackasses.
You want him, Carl?
Let's put a rope on him and drag him.
That's a fine idea, Shell.
Smoke looked at the third man.
You have a name, too? Or did your mother just throw you out with the afterbirth?
Throw me out with the... What? You goddamn right I got a name. It's Ned.
Well, come on, Ned. Don't be shy.
The men again exchanged glances. They'd been riding roughshod over people for years. At no time had they ever run up against anybody like this tall stranger.
You think it's funny now, citizens? But when we finish with this yahoo, we'll settle your hash, too!
You won't be able to do anything in about 5 minutes. None of you. Now either shut your damn mouths or step up here. What's it gonna be?
Ned shot up out of his seat.
I'll tell you what it's gonna be. It's gonna be your ass!
Smoke hit him with a solid left that pulped the man's lips and knocked him flat on his butt on the floor. Shell and Carl rushed him. Smoke turned, picked up a chair, and splintered it across Shell's face. The blood flew, and Shell joined Ned on the floor.
No, 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 no!
Carl's eyes widened, and he did some fast backpedaling, but it was too late. Smoke stepped in and began hammering at the man with both fists. Carl swung a wild blow, and Smoke grabbed the man's forearm and tossed him over the bar. He landed on the ledge amid dozens of bottles of whiskey. The mirror jarred free of its braces and fell on him, shattering in hundreds of pieces. Ned was staggering to his feet just as Smoke grabbed him by the neck and the seat of his jeans. He propelled him toward one of the big front windows. Ned sailed over the warped boardwalk and impacted against and wrapped around a hitching rail. Ned did a little acrobatics around the rail and landed on his back in the street. The wind knocked out of him.
What the hell happened?
Carl was staggering around behind the bar trying to figure out how he'd got there. Smoke cleared it all up real quick for him. Carl went right through the second large window and was thrown up against a horse. The animal reared up in fright and kicked out with its hind legs. The steel-shod hooves caught Carl right in the butt, and the would-be tough went sailing across the street. He landed on his face in the dirt, out cold. The citizens in the town were starting to enjoy themselves immensely. Shell slowly got to his feet and faced a mean-eyed Smoke Jensen.
I don't reckon I can talk you out of this.
I don't reckon.
Shell landed in a horse trough and wisely decided to stay there. Just then, two horsemen rode up and sat their saddles, amazed at the sight before them. Smoke turned to the bartender.
Who is that out there?
Red Lee and his foreman, Jim Sloan, big-time ranger.
Is that right?
Smoke found his whiskey, downed what remained of it, and walked out through the bat wings. Just about all of them was still intact at the front of the saloon. Smoke stood on the boardwalk and looked at the two men for a few seconds. The big, rough-looking man with red hair returned his stare.
I suppose you're Red Lee.
That's right. What the hell's going on around here?
Some of your boys decided to get lippy. One of their suggestions was to rope and drag me. I didn't like the idea.
He damn sure didn't. It was really a bad idea.
Shut up, Shell.
I get the feeling you enjoy the notion of your hands riding roughshod over people. So that makes you responsible for whatever happens. The saloon needs to be swept out and straightened up. You do it.
The whole town was turning out by this point. At least 35 people now stood outside, silent and listening and watching.
You want me to do what?
Swamp out the saloon.
When hell freezes over.
Oh, it'll be before then.
Smoke's hand flashed and his .44 came out. Bullets danced around the hooves of Red's horse. The animal panicked and reared up, dumping Red on his butt in the street. The foreman was frantically fighting to get his own horse under control. Smoke was off the boardwalk and in the street in the blink of an eye. He jerked the foreman out of the saddle and threw him down in the dirt on his belly, momentarily addling the man. He turned and planted a big fist smack on the side of Red's jaw. That rancher went down like a brick. Smoke jerked the guns from leather and tucked them behind his own belt. Then he grabbed Jim by the back of his shirt and hauled him to his feet. He dragged Jim over to where Red lay and grabbed Red in a similar fashion and hoisted him up as well. Smoke dragged them both toward the saloon and then threw them through one of the broken windows. Jim slid on his face for a few feet before he came to rest against the full cuspidor. Red Lee landed hard on its belly and slid a couple of yards, coming to an abrupt halt when his head hit the front of the bar. The bulk of Smoke Jensen filled the pushed open bat wings. His hands were filled with guns taken from the still-addled hands of Red Lee.
Find some brooms and dustpans and get busy.
You're a dead man!
Smoke tossed Red a pistol. Six-shooter landed on the floor, inches from the rancher.
You want to try your luck? Be my guest.
Outside, Shell had climbed out of the water trough. The livery man ran over and whispered in his ear. Shell squished up to the boardwalk and over to a busted window.
Boss, Dyer just read the brand on that stranger's horse. That's Smoke Jensen, boss.
Jensen? He sure?
He says yeah.
Red stared at the six-shooter on the floor.
Well, goddammit, Shell, get in here and help us clean up.
Well, now I am here to tell you that that saloon had never been so clean. Ned, Shell, and Carl pitched in, and the five of them worked till it all shone. Smoke sat at a corner table and ate supper while the men worked. Other area ranchers and farmers drifted in and quietly enjoyed the scene. The saloon was nearly full. Red and his men had been throwing their weight around for years, and payback time was long overdue and much appreciated.
Now, Red, I'll be back through here from time to time.
Now, that was a lie. You couldn't have paid Smoke to come back through there.
Chances are you won't know I'm around, but I will be. If I hear you or your men ever crowding another citizen or drifter, I'll hunt you down and kill you, Red.
Red sullenly pushed a broom across the floor.
This wasn't none of your affair, Jensen.
Nope. Not until your men started crowding me. That made it personal.
They was just having fun.
Huh. I must have missed the humor.
Smoke was under no illusions about what Red was gonna do. Just as soon as Red got a chance, he was gonna try to kill him. Ned and Shell and Carl were cowboys, not fast guns. They rode for a rough brand, but they were not killers. But Jim Sloan was another matter. Smoke felt he would side with his boss when it came down to the nut cutting. Red finally threw down his broom and turned to face Smoke.
That's it, Jensen. No more!
Your choice.
You'd kill me over a bunch of people you've never laid eyes on before today?
You figure it out.
I come in here first, Jensen. I fought in.
I don't want to hear that crap. I'm sick of hearing it from men like you. Yes, you fought Indians and outlaws. Yes, you settled this land. But it's 1883 now, and time has passed you by. The old ways are all but gone. It won't be long before this territory will become a state, with a state militia and maybe even a state police force. You think they'll put up with this crap you've been pulling? The answer is no, they won't. Look around you, Red.
Red did look around him. Saw half a dozen ranchers and their foremen, all armed, all staring back at him. Suddenly, all because of one man, Red knew his days of being top dog were over. The people had become united against him, and he hated Smoke Jensen for that.
You still looking for hands out your spread, Mr. Jackson?
Still looking, Shell. You interested?
I sure am.
Me too.
Well, that's fine, Ned.
And me.
You're all hired, Carl.
You yellow bastards!
You'd best watch your mouth, Mr. Lee. You can insult me all you like, but leave my family out of it. Come on, boys. Let's get our gear from the ranch. See you about dark, Mr. Jackson.
The grub will be hot and waiting on you, boys.
Three punchers left the saloon after nodding respectfully at Smoke.
Go home, Red. Go home and cool off.
Don't you tell me what to do, Jackson. I'll do just as I've always done, and that is whatever I damn well please.
A farmer dressed in overalls and low-heeled boots stepped forward.
Them days is over, Red. You're the only rancher in the area that don't buy my vegetables and bacon and hams, and whose men still ride roughshod over my place. It'll not happen again. I'll tell you that face to face.
Red pointed a shaking finger at the farmer.
You don't talk to me like that, Jurgensen. I don't take lip from a goddamn squatter.
Smoke sat and listened. With any kind of luck, he wouldn't have to draw on the hair-trigger-tempered rancher. He felt that the locals were just about to deal with Red Lee themselves. and maybe he'd been wrong about that foreman, Jim Sloan. The man was slowly edging away from his boss, occasionally looking pleadingly in Smoke's direction. Red suddenly turned on Smoke.
Stand up, gunfighter!
Don't do it, Red. Just settle down and be a good citizen for now.
I said get up, goddamn you!
Try me, Red.
Red turned, disbelief in his eyes.
You, Jackson! You wanna try me?
I reckon it's come to that, Red.
The rancher stood with his feet spread and his right hand close to the butt of his six-gun.
Red, I'm out of this. Come on, let's go home.
Sloan, you're fired, you son of a bitch.
Sloan, you're hired. You're a good cowboy, Jim.
Draw, damn you, Jackson!
I'll not start this.
Red's temper exploded and he grabbed iron. He got off the first shot, the lead splintering wood at Jackson's feet. Jackson didn't miss. Shot Red in the center of his chest and the man staggered back.
You shot me, Jackson.
Smoke poured another cup of coffee. Red tried to speak again, but his mouth was suddenly full of blood. He slowly sank to his knees on the fresh mopped floor and his gun slipped from his fingers. Red just knelt there, looking at the pistol.
It didn't have to be.
Yes, it did.
Sloan's words were very faint to Red Lee as the world began darkening around him.
I tried to tell him. Over the past months, I tried and tried to talk sense to him. He just wouldn't listen.
I know you have, Jim.
The day of the tyrant is over.
Yeah. You be sure and save me a couple of them hams come this fall, Jurgensen. They're mighty fine eating.
Yeah, Jim, I will.
Hams.
Has Red got any kin?
Not that I know of. His wife took the kids and run off years ago, right after he beat her real bad.
She had it coming.
Well, now, I certainly don't have much use for a man who beat a woman.
Red fell over on his face, dead.
Shit. Now I got him out the damn floor again.
Smoke rode out just as the sun was beginning to peep over the ragged crags of the mountains. He had not looked forward to this trip in the first place, and so far his feelings had certainly proved accurate. He was glad to put the little no-named village behind him as he rode north toward the mining town of Red Light. By the end of the day, he was deep in the mountains and climbing higher through the twisting and winding passes. He'd been here before, back when he was a boy, roaming the wilderness with the mountain man Preacher. He remembered a quiet little stream, and he was looking for it. Smoke loved the high country. It was here, amid the splendor of the mountains, that he felt most at home, most at peace with himself and his surroundings. He didn't dwell on the death of the rancher, Red Lee. To Smoke's way of thinking, the deaths of bullies and those who took from society more than they gave were no more meaningful than a hole a man leaves after sticking his finger into a quiet creek. Nothing. Smoke had a simple code, one if followed by all men would make the world a simpler place in which to live. You leave me alone, I will leave you alone. You have a right to a personal opinion, just as I do, but no more than I do. If you violate my space, you'll have to fight me. Smoke knew he was an anachronism. He knew that the courts and lawyers and judges were responsible for making the world a safer place, but also a much more complicated one. And he felt that didn't have to be that way. Smoke rode his own trails, followed his own code of conduct, and tried to live a good life. And he didn't give a damn whether others liked it or disliked it. He found the spot where he and old Preacher had camped so many years ago, and to his delight, he found out it hadn't been disturbed by the hand of man. He made his camp and fished for his supper and was just washing up the skillet.
Hello, DeKalb!
Hello!
I'm friendly! I done that already, so you don't have to feed me, but I sure would like a cup of that coffee I smell.
Come ahead.
The man was probably in his late 60s, Smoke guessed. A miner, to judge by the equipment his mule carried.
Oh,
Smoke pointed to the coffee pot, and the man squatted down and poured himself some, using his own tin cup, which had certainly seen better days.
I'm leaving Red Light. Tain't no fit place for man nor beast no more. Done gone lawless and mean. If you're heading that way, mister, I suggest you give it a second thought.
I was thinking about checking it out.
Well, then you're heading into trouble, although I'd lie to say you look like a man who could handle about anything that was thrown at you. That there colt of yours ain't new, but it's seen some use.
Some?
I ain't never gonna go back up yonder, so I can tell you who to look out for and what's wrong with the place. And that's easy, because everything is wrong. Don't trust the sheriff or none of his deputies. They're all in the pocket of Major Cosgrove, who's a thief and a murderer and all-around no good son of a bitch. Oh, he talks fancy and lives in a fine home, but he's a no-count. Yeah, Red Light's a booming town now, and mean to the core. Must be 700 or 800 people all crowded up there. It'll stay that way till the gold is gone. Then there won't be 50 people left. Jack Biggers is the big rancher in the area. He's just as mean and no good as Sheriff Bowers and Major Cosgrove. And so are the men who work for him. It just ain't a good place to linger, sonny. I'd give it some thought if I was you.
How about other ranchers in the valley?
You know about the valley, huh? Well, there ain't but two other ranchers, Jack Biggers and Fat Fosburn. Jenny Jensen and an old man named Van Horn is holding the kid's ranch against long odds. The powers that be want the girl's ranch. The other ranchers was burned out, run out, or killed. Between you and me, I fear for the girl's life, I do. Them men would as soon kill a girl as shoot a snake. Yeah, she come into all her mama's property. But most of it ain't fitting for a decent girl to be associated with.
Is that right?
No, sir, it ain't. All but the ranch. It's a beautiful little ranch in that valley. And my, it do have good water and graze. But Jack Biggers wants that property for his'n. And what Jack Biggers wants, well, he gets. That's good coffee. Well, I thank you for the hospitality. I got me a favorite place about 3-4 miles down the way. But I smelled that coffee and got to salivating. See you, young fella. You get on, mule.
Before Smoke could ask another question, that old man had swung into the saddle and was gone. Smoke went to his pack and began removing what he felt he might need, including a 10-gauge Colt revolving shotgun that he had had for many years. He had sent it back to the factory in Hartford to have it reworked and refinished, and they had done a bang-up job. It was originally a 27-inch barrel, and he'd sawed that off to within a few inches of the forestock. At close range, it could clear an entire room of all living things. The cylinder held 5 rounds, and Smoke had loaded them and a sack full of other shells himself. He took his pistols and cleaned them carefully, loading them up full. For the time being, he would not wear his left-hand holster, but instead tucked the second pistol behind his gun belt. He had a hunch, unless somebody recognized him, that he could, for a time, ride in and be known as Kay Jensen with nobody the wiser. At least it was worth a try. He cleaned and loaded his rifle, and then rolled up in his blankets.
I wonder what kind of business my sister might have had that's not fitting for a young lady to go near.
The next day, Smoke topped a rise and looked down at the town of Red Light. He took an immediate dislike to the place. The streets were crooked and twisty and narrow. The buildings were all jammed up against one another. Like most boom towns, it was a mishmash of buildings and tents and wagons. Even from where he sat above the town, he could hear that shrill and false laughter of hurdy-gurdy girls, busy separating miners from their gold dust and nuggets. Smoke had deliberately not shaved his upper lip since leaving the ranch, and his mustache was nearly growed out now, since he had a naturally heavy beard. The mustache made him look several years older and one hell of a lot meaner. The mustache was beginning to droop down toward his chin and made Smoke look like he'd come off the Hoot Owl trail.
All right, Buck. Let's go check out this dump.